Well, let's move on. Hillary Meyer is here to tell us about SAGE, Services and Advocacy for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Elders.
Hillary is the Director of National Programs for SAGE. Hi, Hillary. Welcome to The Out Agenda.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
SAGE, Services and Advocacy for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Elders. SAGE has been active, I noticed, since 1978, which is quite a long time ago. So it's a mature organization, if not as yet an elderly one. Who started SAGE, and what did they set out to do at the beginning?
Well, SAGE was founded by a small group of very passionate advocates of all ages in New York City who got together and realized that there really were not enough support systems in place for LGBT older people, especially around health and financial security. So they set out to develop some programming to set those supports in place. SAGE was originally known as Senior Action in a Gay Environment. We've since changed what the words mean, but the acronym stays the same. Certainly the passion is still the same. In fact, some of the programs that were started originally back then with one or two staff people continue in existence today and were the first and most robust services of their kind. So, for example, we started the first friendly visitor program for LGBT older adults. We started the first support group for older adults living with HIV and AIDS, and those programs still continue to this day.
You started in 1978, just about the time when HIV and AIDS came to medical attention, and it became a very serious problem. Supporting older LGBT people living with the virus, helping those who had no hope of surviving the disease, and comforting the bereaved partners and friends. Was that a major focus of SAGE's work during the 80s and 90s, and are you still doing work with HIV and AIDS?
Certainly. SAGE began with a passion for supporting older adults in ways that they weren't otherwise receiving those supports, and the HIV AIDS epidemic was a large part of that work at the beginning. And in fact, today, even more so, the research predicts that one in two folks who are HIV infected will be over the age of 50 in this country within the next few years. And of course, the LGBT people and people of color are disproportionately affected by HIV and AIDS. So SAGE continues to be very involved with the movement. We continue to run support groups for HIV and HIV-affected people. So folks with the disease, caregivers for folks with the disease. We also have a robust policy platform advocating for legislative and administrative changes related to strengthening the supports for people living with HIV.
Tell us a little bit about some of the support work that you do for the people who have HIV or who have AIDS.
The support groups are a large focus of that particular community. We also offer case management services and other types of social support work, not just for those with HIV, but for the larger LGBT population. There are a number of caregiver supports in place as well for folks who are helping to care for people with HIV and AIDS. And we do a good deal of education around the importance of continuing to stay safe and protecting yourself from HIV is also part of SAGE's work.
We keep talking about elders. What is the age group of your target?
Right. Well, our HIV work begins at age 50. Most of the other work that we do is targeting groups of people 62 and older. So even from there, there's a large range of people. A 62-year-old person likely has very different needs and concerns than a 78-year-old person. So there are different levels of service that we provide based on the age groups as well.
Now, this is a national organization, and we're talking about different ages. Nationally, people are different. Do you have to mold the program to meet that area?
Oh, very much so. SAGE operates in now 20 states plus the District of Columbia. We have 27 affiliate offices, and each of those affiliates are running different types of programming dependent partly on the capacity of the staff and partly dependent on what's needed in that area. In some places, one thing might be very needed, and then another place it's not. So it's selective around what the community needs.
Is it basically in big cities? You say it's 20 states.
20 states, yeah. We have a mix of urban and suburban and rural groups. It's the states are diverse, and within the states there are places where there are a few different affiliates as well. So New York has a few affiliates, for example. Pennsylvania has a couple. So there are some states that repeat themselves, but the states are pretty diverse across the country.
SAGE started in New York City, and it's now moved across the country, more or less. Did that happen quickly, or was it slow and piecemeal?
It was slow at first. In recent years, it's become very clear, partly with the help of research that shows the growing number of LGBT people, especially as baby boomers begin to retire, has really created a large need of both services for LGBT people as they're getting older, but also for the provider communities that have really never worked with LGBT older people in such great numbers. This is the largest generation of out people, people who are out of the closet and needing services. And there's a good deal of focus on providing services that are what we would call culturally competent, services that are welcoming and inclusive to LGBT older people. And so with those larger numbers, we see that there's a greater need in all different parts of the country to provide these services, to work with providers. Now we have expanded at quite a clip. In fact, we have currently a hold on new affiliates because we have had so many new affiliates and new groups that have been wanting to do the work that for now we're focusing on the groups that we currently are working with and potential to expand further. But at the moment, we're on a hold.
What are the important missions for SAGE today, and what programs do you have to support those missions?
Well, our overall mission is to improve the lives of LGBT people across the country, and we provide a vast array of direct services, some of which we've already talked about. We provide cultural competency trainings, and we create information and tools to both help LGBT people themselves and their caregivers and friends and family around the unique issues for the LGBT older adult communities. And SAGE also has a fairly diverse federal policy platform.
Can you give us a quick example, perhaps, of the cultural competency training?
Through SAGE's National Resource Center on LGBT Aging, we have a network of certified trainers across the country who are able to use various curricula that we have developed that helps walk providers through understanding why there are unique needs, learning about empathy around working with minority population, and helping them to understand how to create a welcoming environment, really. So once providers understand and are empathetic to the issues that LGBT older adults face, then taking the next step of creating those welcoming and inclusive environments is also a big part of the trainings that we provide.
Do you work with some of the LGBT centers?
We
do. Do you work through them, or do you work separately, or do you work in conjunction with them?
We work often with them. Sometimes our affiliates are housed in LGBT centers. We also have, through our training platform, we have trainings that are offered for LGBT organizations on learning how to be age-friendly in the programming that they do as well. We collaborate closely on the training piece with a group called CenterLink, which is the umbrella group for all LGBT community centers across the country, and they also are an integral part of the training efforts that we're doing as well.
Baby boomers, you know, well, we're getting to that point where we're going to go into senior homes. Not all of us can get into an LGBT senior home because there's not that many around. So many of us, and it's going to happen at some point in our life where someone else is going to have to take care of us. You may feel like you're the only LGBT person in that home. Is that some of the training you do with some of these homes?
Absolutely. You know, one of the first questions that we ask providers when we're standing in front of them is, how many people know an LGBT person? And almost everyone in the room raises their hand. And then we ask how many people are serving an LGBT person who is over 50 or 60. and that hands dropped dramatically. And the realization there is that LGBT people get older, and whether or not you know it, they are in your presence, and the goal is to help them feel like they can be comfortable and be authentic with the providers themselves. You know, there's some basic statistics that show where same-sex couples are living, which is in 93% of the counties in the United States, for example. There are some illustrative ways of showing that there are LGBT people everywhere. But to understand and really internalize the idea that LGBT people get old just like everyone else is an important concept for providers who think, huh, I've never really considered that before. And then helping them to take that next step of understanding how to be welcoming in a way that they would be able to have conversations with people who feel comfortable then disclosing their sexual orientation and gender identity is really important for us.
I'm sure some of them that are couples may want to stay together and feel comfortable in that environment.
Yes, that's definitely true. We've had some helpful agency rulings to emphasize the fact that that same-sex couples are allowed to room together, for example, in skilled nursing facilities and the like. But the idea of a couple moving into any sort of a senior living community can be faced with some apprehension from the couples. Will they be accepted not just by the staff but by their peers? And helping providers understand how to create those really inclusive environments in welcoming and celebrating diversity is a big part of our work as well.
And I'm sure it must be very scary, too, for them.
Well, absolutely. We've heard a number of stories of folks who think that they need to go back into the closet to be just roommates with when providers are around. Or there's actually been some really distressing research that was just published a few months ago by a group called the Equal Rights Center that did some blind testing of some senior housing facilities in different states, and they had a different sex couple call and ask about availability and so forth at these facilities, and then a couple posing as a same-sex couple, or at least implying that they are in a same-sex relationship, call, and a number of alarmingly high percentage got different answers around availability and prices and so forth, that evidence that there still is a lot of bias and discrimination happening by facilities that frankly are unprepared and don't know how to work with same-sex couples. Of course, there's going to be some fear around accessing these places.
Did you find that that kind of thing happens more in certain parts of the country rather than others, or is it more or less uniform?
Well, this particular study looked at 10 different states in different parts of the country, so it's hard to extrapolate to all 50, but certainly in these 10 there was evidence that it was happening across the board.
You may have someone who really is in need of looking after, but the partner is very well. So it then becomes very difficult to move into a situation where even the partner is made to feel that he or she is no longer as competent. Or sometimes you have age differences between people. One person might be ready to go into accommodation like that and the other isn't.
Because sometimes one is ready to go into a facility, the other one isn't. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they need a support group. Mm-hmm. Caregivers is another thing. A lot of people, even though we're baby boomers being senior, our parents are still alive. Mm-hmm. And we are now having to take care of them. So that's another type of caregiver. And these type of the people need support groups and don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a common issue where the adult child is in a relationship, it may not be seen as more important or as important as their siblings' relationships, perhaps because they don't have children themselves that they're looked to more often to provide the support for an aging parent. And there are some unique needs as well beyond just how much care has to be provided by an LGBT adult child, but also around when an adult child does have a partner, going in to visit an aging parent in a facility, that can sometimes be challenging in and of itself, understanding with the staff that this is a same-sex couple, that the child is LGBT, the parent may not be. And so SAGE has developed a really interesting program called SAGECAP. It stands for SAGE's Caring and Preparing, and it provides support for just those types of issues.
As you were saying, your partner, too, maybe one is ready to go into a facility and the other one isn't quite there yet. And that's tough because they don't, society doesn't look at us as a couple.
Yes, and that's part of that educational work that we talked about helping providers to understand that same-sex couples face a number of similar issues as different-sex couples, and understanding that partners need support, too, in caregiving support and in feeling comfortable in being with their partner in a facility and visiting, making sure that visitation is allowed in the same way. Those are all important parts of the work that SAGE is doing around education and advocacy.
Advocacy. It's something that I don't always understand when I see the term. So I'm interested in what SAGE does there. What are you working to achieve?
So advocacy can mean a lot of different things, depending on who is doing the advocating. Certainly we help folks to be able to advocate for themselves, and we learn a lot as SAGE staff members about folks who have done a lot of advocacy for themselves and have been really pioneers in the LGBT movement. There's a certain level of grassroots advocacy that's happening both by staff and by our constituents. But SAGE also does have a federal advocacy platform. We have an office in Washington, D.C., and we coordinate with a number of different groups, both leaders in the aging field and also in the LGBT field, to promote different policy and legislative changes that would strengthen the support for LGBT older people. I can give you a few priorities that we're working on right now. We are working hard to ensure that the Older Americans Act, which is the largest funder of senior services in the country, includes LGBT people in a very explicit way, and that can be through funding itself, that can be through advocating for trainings and so forth. We are working to extend Medicaid protections for same-sex couples in places that those aren't available. We are promoting training and approaches to cultural competence through agency and legislative changes as well. And as we already discussed, strengthening support for older adults with HIV is an important part of our work as well. And we do that with a collaborative approach. There are a number of groups that are working with marginalized senior populations that have come together to advocate across the platforms. That includes LGBT people, which has been really helpful as well to the federal agenda.
Now, I was just thinking that older LGBT people who are from a variety of ethnic groups and cultural groups, some of whom might even be relatively new in this country, having come from somewhere else, it must be very difficult for them to accommodate to the society around them with their special needs. There are cultural needs and religious needs, all sorts of things mixed together.
For folks who are facing marginalization around being a religious minority or an ethnic minority, a racial minority, there is extra levels of stigma. And research has shown that there's been some pretty dramatic health disparities related to having multiple marginalizations, if you will, sexual orientation and gender identity being two of those. So certainly marginalized elders for a number of different reasons, socioeconomic, racial, religious, are a particular concern to SAGE, and part of our mission is to try and reach the most isolated and the most marginalized with the services that they need in ways that they feel comfortable accessing them.
How is SAGE funded?
SAGE is funded through a mix of private donation, corporate donation, government funding, and foundation funding. We strive for diversity across the platforms of ways to be funded, as many nonprofits do.
Now, is the government funding entirely federal funding, or does it come from the states as well?
We have a mix of federal-funded initiatives as well as state and sometimes city-based funding. There's a number of different ways that governments play into the roles that SAGE does.
How can some of our listeners support you?
There are a number of ways to support SAGE. I would suggest that folks that have internet access go to our website, sageusa.org, to learn about the various ways that they can support us, certainly through donations, through volunteering, for tips on helpful advocacy around educating friends and family members around these unique issues. All are really important ways that your listeners can support SAGE.
I'm a member of AARP, and they're always advocacy for LGBT, but I never see it in their magazines. What is the relationship?
AARP and SAGE are continuing to actually build a more public platform of collaboration. They have been supporters of SAGE in the past. They continue in some states to be really important supporters. And the national AARP collaboration is in progress. AARP, a couple of years ago, put something in their magazine around LGBT seniors, which we applauded, and they also have a good section on their website dedicated to LGBT people, which is a platform that we point people to when they're interested in what AARP is doing for LGBT seniors. But certainly we always want to be doing more, and we have a number of different ideas and are in communications with them to determine what is the most effective way to collaborate.
So what about new projects to further the mission of SAGE?
The needs of the LGBT community, especially in the age range that we're talking about, are constantly changing. And SAGE is working really hard to build data and research to understand exactly what those needs are at any given time and figure out creative and innovative and sustainable approaches to helping meet those needs. I'm really proud of SAGE's efforts in staying ahead and trying to create programs that work, that are based on evidence and that are based on true need, and that also can last, that if the funding goes away for a particular project, that it will continue to sustain itself in other ways. So many, many things on the horizon, Chris. We're really looking forward to months and years ahead.
Hillary, thank you so much for joining us and talking about the work of SAGE.
Thank you for having me.
And can you let us know how we can find out more information, that website again?
SAGE's website is sageusa.org, sageusa.org.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank Hillary Meyer for joining us this evening.
Next week we'll have... No, I let it be a surprise.
Well, it better be a good surprise.
Of course it will be. You can count on it.
Indeed, as the British say. I'm picking up your old bad habits and saying things I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm not British. But it sounds better when you say it. I say it, it just doesn't sound right.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I'll ignore all that and speak to our listeners. Contact us and tell us what you think of The Out Agenda. Like us, even if you don't. Post your comments to our Facebook page or email us at theoutagenda@aol.com.
We have links to some of today's topics on our Facebook pages. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week. And I'm Rita Gonzalez.
And I'm Chris Coleman. Remember that being out is the first step to being equal.